is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
You can show them some fancy document with all these numbers on it, and the graphics might be cool, and it might be all color-coded and whatever. But if the coaches don't know what everything means in practicality on the basketball court, then it's all useless. And so it might look cool to you or to Twitter or whatever, but that's one thing I really pride myself on, is being able to explain it in a logical and a coherent way that the coaches can not only understand, but also implement into a game plan to help us win games.
Dylan Mihalky is currently a men's basketball graduate assistant coach at Oklahoma University under head coach Porter Moser. He spent the previous three seasons as a student manager for the men's basketball team at the University of Iowa under head coach Fran McCaffrey. On this episode, Dylan shares his insights and advice on breaking into the college basketball coaching world. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Gannon Baker, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit QuickCut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with Dylan Mihalky, men's basketball graduate assistant coach at Oklahoma University. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast Dylan Mihalky, graduate assistant men's basketball coach at Oklahoma University. Dylan, welcome to the Hoopheads pod. We are excited to have you on. You are at a stage in your career that a lot of the coaches in our audience are sharing with you, in that you're a young coach trying to figure out your way, build a career in the coaching profession. So I'm hoping that we can pull out a bunch of insights from what you've been able to do. I want to start, though, by going back in time to when you were a kid. Talk to us about your first experiences in the game of basketball, what those were like, what you remember about being introduced to the game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Pleasure to be on. I think for me, I actually, none of my family played basketball. I just kind of grew up with this innate love for it. I would always watch all the games on TV when I was a kid. I'd check the box scores in the newspaper and look at all the stats from the night before and just kind of really study not just the players, but I love the teams, the roster constructions on both the NBA and the college level. And so, no, I always grew up just watching the game and studying it, and I'd always never do my homework and just watch basketball. And then as I was a young kid, I started to play a lot through elementary and into middle school as well, and then played a couple years of JV basketball, but then was out-athletic, you could say, and a lot of people were taller than me, more athletic than I was, but I still loved the game, and I think that was always the key for me, was my love for the game always reigned, just really was in everything I did. I would always, you know, watch all the games from the night and talk to my friends about it and really look at all the stats behind it. And so that's kind of where my love for the game first developed. And, you know, I can't remember a night where I wasn't staying up late watching basketball, making my mom tell me to go to bed. So,
all right, let's start here. Who's your favorite college team growing up?
Ooh, well, so I'm raised in Los Angeles, California. So I loved UCLA. I would always, one of my best friends when I was in middle school and elementary school, even both of his parents were UCLA alumni. And so he'd always have an extra ticket, and his sister never would want to go. And so he'd always take me with his parents, and we'd watch UCLA. And that was back in the day when they had Darren Collison, Kevin Love, Russell Westbrook. And then, you know, Klay Thompson would come to town, James Harden, Isaiah Thomas, all the great Pac-10 players back then. And so, no, UCLA was kind of my first college team that I really grew up loving.
What about pro team? Are you a Lakers guy?
Ooh,
That's a no.
not really. No, I was a big Clippers fan, actually, because I just goes back to kind of my team-building mindset. I loved when they brought in Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, Jamal Crawford, that whole Lob City team, and kind of being the other team in L.A. kind of – you know, pulled at my heartstrings. So no, I was a Clippers guy really growing up. Not too much anymore, because I'm more into college basketball now, just time wise. But no, definitely was a Clippers fan over the Lakers growing up in LA.
How painful was the loss to the Rockets?
Oh, brutal.
What? Okay, so as a guy growing up watching that team closely, why do you think that team was never able to get over the hump and get to the finals? Do you think that that particular game, for whatever reason, they imploded? Do you think that broke them where they just couldn't get over the mental hurdle? Or what do you think it was growing up watching them?
Great question. I think a lot of it was that mental hurdle. You know, I think a lot of times in basketball, it's it comes down to who's got the best player on the court. And as much as Chris Paul is by far my favorite NBA player of all time, a lot of situations, you know, he wasn't the alpha dog best player on the court at that time and in that moment. Now, they had a great team, and he did a great job of setting up other guys, and they had great coaching, obviously, and great shooting, and they had all kind of the pieces, but they never had that one kind of alpha talent that could bring him over the hump. Now, I was so happy when he was able to get to finals last year with the Suns, obviously, and then Giannis kind of took over from there. But I think that was their main Achilles heel, and then the mental side of it was, I think, a real, very real factor that played a part too.
I think the Chris Paul piece of it is that it's really difficult to be a 6-foot guy and impose your will as the number one on a team. When you have Giannis, who's a 7-foot guy, who's unbelievably physical, you think about the LeBrons, the Kawhis, the Kevin Durants, the guys who have won titles, they have that physical size and those physical tools that Chris Paul, obviously tremendously blessed as with speed, quickness, toughness, strength, all those things. But when you do that at 6 foot versus doing it at 6'11", it's not quite the same. And I think that's where when your best player is 6 feet tall, it's a lot tougher. Let's put it that way.
No, I completely agree with that for sure. And I think for him especially, he had the mental side of it, but a lot of times, as you mentioned, the physical side wasn't necessarily there for him.
So when you are finishing your career as a player, and obviously you love the game, you're staying up late, you're watching basketball, you've got lots of thoughts, you want to stay involved in it. What's the next step for you when you realize that your playing career is over? How do you start to envision staying involved in the game? Do you immediately think, hey, I'm going to get into coaching? Did you think, hey, maybe someday I'll be a broadcaster? Maybe I want to get into analytics? What was your thought process as you were no longer able to play?
Yeah, no, great question. I think for me, I refereed some games at the local YMCA. I coached a team of like third and fourth graders, which was a fun experience. But my goal growing up was really, I really just wanted to be a college athlete. You know, I didn't really necessarily care what sport. I really just wanted to be a college athlete, and I love sports, all sports. So I just wanted to play a sport in college. And I really found out I had a gift for running. And so I kind of picked up cross country in track and field, and I had great success with that. I actually won my conference in the mile and the 2 mile. I ran a 4:45 mile, which I personally thought was good. In Southern California, it wasn't the elite of the elite, but I thought it was good. And so I really focused on running at that point. And then my story kind of takes an interesting turn, because God really had a different plan for my life, because as I was running, I was doing everything I could to try to be a college athlete in cross country and track. And then I just had massive injuries, and I was overtraining, so my legs were super fatigued, and I just couldn't really run anymore physically. And so going into my senior year of high school, I realized that I had always loved basketball, but kind of almost diverted from that a little bit to pursue this dream of being a college athlete and track and cross country. And I was blessed enough that my high school coach, Kevin Kelsey, he was able to give me a shot to be, you know, kind of a manager on our varsity basketball team my senior year of high school. And it was a great position for me, because we actually didn't have an assistant coach. And Coach Kelsey was both the athletic director at the school and the varsity basketball coach. And it was a small Christian school in Santa Monica, California. And so he was, you know, really not over his head by any means, but just had a lot going on. And so he allowed me great freedom as just a manager for the team to be able to do a lot of, you know, all of our video, all of our stats, a lot of our play breakdown, a lot of our film studies with the players, a lot of our workouts and stuff. And so as a, you know, varsity basketball manager, who was just a, you know, kid growing up loving the game of basketball, I was able to do a diverse array of, you know, skills and a diverse array of activities with our players, who are also some of my best friends. And so that senior year experience in high school was really rewarding. And it was not only rewarding, but it was really fruitful in the way of I was able to really get my first start into really being part of a team and really getting that coaching and manager. And even a lot of the work I do today as a graduate assistant, I think back to that moment of Coach Kelsey giving me that opportunity to be a part of his team really on short notice once my running career ended.
What was the learning curve like for you with some of those different tasks? So when you start thinking about breaking down film or keeping statistics, how long did it take you to feel comfortable with some of those tasks? And obviously, as you said, those are things that are going to benefit you as you move forward from high school and you get to the University of Iowa. But just talk about some of the things that you learned along the way in that first year as a manager that now have played a part, or maybe there's still things that you're doing.
Yeah, I think, you know, I learned a lot of, you know, kind of technical skills, you could call it, you know, obviously filming games and, you know, doing stats on the bench and helping out, you know, some of our players work out and just kind of a variety of those skill sets. But, you know, more so, I really just learned the value of hard work. And a lot of times in hard work, I thought of schoolwork, or I thought of, you know, doing chores or whatever when I was a kid. And then, you know, once I really figured out that, like, it's so much easier to do hard work and work harder when it's something that you're super passionate about, and when it's something that you wake up every morning excited to pursue. And Coach Moser here at OU, he's got a huge thing of, you know, we get to do this, we don't got to do this. And so for me, once I really realized that I get to, you know, be a manager for this team, I get to help out with our, you know, high school basketball team, college basketball team, whatever, and I really it's fueled a passion within me, and it makes it easier to work extra hard. It makes it easier to wake up at 6:30 before school to do the stats from yesterday's practice, or break down the game from last night, or you know, even stay late and do a workout with, you know, some of our players. It just makes it so much easier when you're really passionate about something, and not only passionate about something, but you really see a future in something. And so that's where those, like I said, those skills, but also those habits, those values really were nurtured within me.
Do you think that that experience as a senior in high school, was that when you first started to think about coaching as a profession, or were you still thinking of it as, hey, I love this, I'm having fun, I'm around the team, I'm around basketball, but I still may end up going into banking or something else? Where was your thought process there?
Yeah, no, I think that was really when I first realized that coaching can be a full-time job, and you know, coaching, you can really make your life's work in coaching. And before I never really assumed that for some reason. I thought, you know, even watching college and pro basketball, I didn't think that, like, I didn't realize the hours that these coaches, both at Iowa, Oklahoma, and all across the country, I didn't realize how much time they put in to prepare these scouts, to develop these players, to recruit these student athletes. And so, you know, in both my senior year in high school, but then also even my first month on the job at Iowa, that's when I first, that kind of transition and seeing both at the high school level and the college level, I realized that, okay, coaching basketball is a full-time job, more than a full-time job. Coaching basketball can be your life's work, be your profession, and you can make a major impact on, you know, not only the other coaches you work with and the community at large, but even more so the individual relationships from, you know, players and coaches, and even managers and players, and managers and coaches, and vice versa.
Absolutely. How does an LA kid get to the University of Iowa?
You are not the first person to ask me that question. My uncle actually lives in Iowa City, and I have a ton of family in the Midwest and Chicago suburbs area, and even in Iowa. And so I would always go out to visit my uncle and go to Iowa basketball, Iowa football games, and would always have fun and, you know, kind of see it as a weird kind of college town in the middle of nowhere. And then actually the summer going into my senior year of high school, before I became a manager, I emailed 25 college basketball programs I just wanted to get in touch with. And I asked them if there was anything I could do to potentially just get involved once I get to college. I didn't even know, and this was before my senior year of high school, so I didn't know exactly what I'd want to do, but I felt this kind of, you know, I felt this little, you know, I guess almost like punch inside me to email people and to reach out and just to see. And so I emailed a bunch of different programs, and thankfully enough, the head manager at Iowa got back to me and offered me a volunteer job to work camp. He said, you know, all I would get would be lunch in the middle of the day, and you know, I'd have to find a place to live, which obviously was convenient with my uncle living there. And so summer going to my senior year of high school, I volunteered working the summer camps there, and it was the best experience of my life. And that is actually what first kind of made me realize, okay, I can be a manager in college. And then I kind of was like, okay, I could probably be a manager for my high school team. And that kind of started the train. And so I actually only applied to the University of Iowa. It was the only school I applied for. I applied the day the application opened, and I got accepted within I think a month of my application or so. And so I was really kind of committed from there on, and it made the college application process academically much easier, but it also allowed me to apply for scholarships, allowed me to stay in touch with the basketball program, and allowed me to really get involved within Iowa even before I got there.
So once you get there and you've obviously had contact with the head manager, when do you have your first contact with Coach McCaffrey and the staff, and when do you get the official invite to become and be a student manager?
Yeah, so to be a manager, they make you volunteer for camp. So I actually volunteered for camp 2 years in a row, which most people only did 1 year. And so I volunteered for camp, and then later in the summer, once you actually move on to campus, they bring you in for an interview with some of the coaching staff. And obviously that was a scary experience for a freshman in college.
How many people are sitting at the table?
There was two other managers. They had one GA there, the assistant director of operations, obviously the basketball director of operations, And then I think our video coordinator slash like director of recruiting was there as well. So a couple members of the staff, and that was my first day of classes as a college student. But no, that was a fun experience. And then thankfully enough, you know, I'm super blessed that I was able to get the position. And then, you know, the next week, once we start coming in for workouts and stuff, I was able to thankfully meet Coach McCaffrey and the rest of the staff.
How many managers are on staff at any one time?
Yeah, so we normally at Iowa, we had 7 managers, which I've asked probably 100 managers across the country. And that's a lot of times towards the upper end of a lot of the lower or mid-major programs. But for a lot of the other Big Ten programs, they had 15 to 20 managers. And so I was really blessed with that, because obviously when you have only 7 managers, obviously it's more work, but you also get to do more. And I always really loved that, because all of us managers were in the office every day. We were doing video, doing stats, doing player workouts, helping out with recruiting mail outs, doing a bunch of other just general operational duties in the office. And so that was a great experience for me, because we were able to do a lot of the stuff I do as a GA now, we were able to do as managers. And so it really prepared me for not just this job that I have right now, but also the future if I want to, you know, be a video coordinator, be a director of operations, and continue moving up. I feel like I got a really, really great baseline and worked with a tremendous staff there at Iowa.
Was there one member of the coaching staff in particular that looked out for you, that took you under their wing, kind of acted as your mentor, for lack of a better way of saying, but just somebody who kind of kept an eye on you, somebody who pulled you aside, said, hey, think about this, or hey, we need you to do a little bit of that? Was there anybody that fit that description?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm going to give 2 people in particular. Firstly, our assistant director of operations, Kyle Denning, was a walk-on at Iowa and then had been on staff there since being a walk-on. He was a GA and then moved his way up to assistant director of operations. He was always such a great mentor for me. We would always go to the same church on Sundays. We would really had a strong emotional connection outside of basketball. And he was always kind of that steadying force during a stressful day, or, you know, on the plane ride after a loss or whatnot. He was always really consistent and such a great mentor to me. And being a fellow, you know, kind of young member of staff, he really helped me just in a lot of ways emotionally during college, and also spiritually as well. And then secondly, one of our coaches, Kirk Spira, played at Iowa as a walk-on back in the 1980s with Coach Olson, was on the Final Four team in 1980 as a graduate assistant at Iowa, and then had been at a bunch of stops, including being the head coach at UCF before returning back to Iowa as an assistant coach. And he was just a great mentor to me in the way of always allowing me to talk to him and ask him questions that now I look back on and say, oh, that was a dumb question. But in the moment, he really just never acted like he was too big time for me or anything, and just really allowed me to be myself, and always was a helping hand, and then always reached out to me if he ever needed any special projects. I mean, I remember last year I, you know, charted all of our box outs for every game. And so he would always allow me to do a lot of, you know, what I would consider special projects for him. But he always did it with a smile, and he would always give me a hard time. And just me and Coach Spira really developed a close relationship, and I'm super blessed to be able to have worked with him, and just his personable nature was always so great to me.
What's the funniest or craziest thing that anybody ever asked you to do as a manager there at Iowa?
I could probably go on for a while about this. Let's see. That's a great one.
I want people to know if they're thinking about being a student manager. I want people to know what they're getting into.
No, it seems more glamorous on the outside than it is. So no, that's good. Trying to think. You know, we had a tradition at Iowa that whatever managers didn't go on the road trips, who stayed back, would always go to the parking lot where the staff and the players would park their cars. And on cold nights, and as you probably know, in Iowa, there's some January, February nights where it gets, you know, windy, cold, negative 40, blizzard, whatever. And so the managers who stayed back would have to start the coaches' cars and obviously put the defroster on, the seat warmers, get that thing going, and, you know, scrape the windows of all the players' cars and stuff. And so, you know, that really humbles you. As and for me, I was a freshman manager from Los Angeles, California, and so that was good. That was definitely a rude awakening for me. But no, it was kind of a, you know, it turned out to be kind of a fun tradition. And when you go through your years in the program and you go from going on 3 road trips to 6 road trips to all the road trips, when you get into your last couple of years, you think back, the freshmen are like, did you guys have to do this? And then we're like, yeah, we did. We paid our dues. So it definitely makes you, it definitely humbles you, but also, obviously whatever we can do to help the program, you have to have that attitude as a student manager. And when the coaches are coming back, at 2 a.m. after a overtime loss at Minnesota or whatever, and, you know, anything you can do to help the players and the coaches, they thank you for it and they value it. And so, and that's the whole part about being a manager. It's just, you do a lot of work that nobody sees, but, on the inside, you have satisfaction because you know it helps the greater good of the program.
What was the relationship like between managers and players at Iowa? How did you bond? What was your connection with the guys on the team?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was honestly a terrific relationship and just a great bond between the managers and the players. We had a couple of our managers lived with the players, and so they were obviously much closer because they went home every night and saw each other. But no, in general, it was really cool just because, you know, a lot of times I think a lot of people on the outside see these college players as, you know, big time stars and see them just on ESPN every night. But at the end of the day, you know, as a manager, they're just regular college students like you are trying to figure it out. And they're going to the 8 a.m. classes with you and they're, you know, going to study hall and they're just, they're eating in the dining halls and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's a really good relationship that it was a really healthy, great relationship that the managers and the players had at Iowa. And I remember my freshman year, I lived not in the same dorm building, but it was a dorm building right next door to where Joe Wieskamp and CJ Frederick lived, who are two of my best friends to this day. And CJ actually redshirted his first year at Iowa. And I remember him and I would always just take the campus bus over to Carver Hawkeye Arena on the weekends, and I'd rebound for him for a little bit, and then we'd go out to lunch downtown or something. And so just those relationships and those bonds are really special. And, you know, now looking back, you know, and seeing what a lot of those players on the teams that I've been a part of have doing now, some in the NBA, some at different schools, some still at Iowa, it makes you think back to those, just the relationships. And that's the biggest thing I've learned since working in college basketball, which is, you know, obviously short-lived so far, but it's really the relationships that make, you know, that mean the world to you once you leave. I mean, you remember the wins, you remember the losses, whatever, but a lot of times it's the relationships and the lifelong relationships that you form that really make you realize, you know, how special this sport is.
What kind of meetings and sort of behind the scenes things were you able to see, observe, or be a part of as a manager? Were you ever able to sit down and be a part of, let's say, like a practice planning meeting or a scout meeting? Just what were you able to see as a manager as opposed to maybe being a, quote, regular member of the coaching staff?
Yeah. So, you know, as a manager at Iowa, we and I know some programs are like this and some are not like this. But as managers, we did a lot involving the scouting reports, a lot involving the video, a lot in, you know, revolving the statistics for the coaching staff, some of the analytics, and just kind of that whole diverse experience, as well as being in practice every day, obviously. And, you know, for me, the biggest thing I realized was just, and kind of going back to the meetings that we were a part of, is just being able to see the coaching staff work through the scouts of every Big Ten team and every NCAA tournament team and, every non-conference team even. So just, you know, being a part of those practices and watching the scout team go through their plays and then watching, you know, the defense guarding our offense and then being involved in, you know, being able to watch in on the film sessions and, listen to some of the best coaches in the country, you know, break down the plays or break down the personnel. It just really opens your eyes, you know, to obviously how detailed the scouts are at this level, but also how much work the coaching staff and the managers and the, you know, video coordinators and just how much work everyone puts in to each scout and each game plan is just phenomenal. And so, you know, just to be a fly in the wall in a lot of those practices and a lot of those conversations, obviously working, you know, the practices and stuff, but just, you know, listening to how we're going to guard this and how we're going to, you know, beat that ball screen coverage. And it's really, really cool when you see something, you know, being emphasized in a practice or a new set being put in a, you know, walkthrough or practice, and then that being implemented in the game. Is just a really, really cool experience that I look back on. I'm just so thankful that, you know, the coaches at Iowa are so welcoming to us managers and, you know, especially just so welcoming to allow us to be an integral part of the program there. It's just such a blessing. And so I'm so grateful for, you know, Coach McCaffrey, obviously at the helm of it, just allowing us managers to be such a big part of his program and really listening to us and really allowing us to have a really big role.
How long into that experience did it take for you to become convinced that college basketball coaching was the direction you wanted to go with your career?
I think it was probably within the genuinely the first week of the job. I kid you not. I remember going to the first couple workouts in the fall, and obviously those workouts are just, you know, short hour workouts compared to the 3-hour practices during the season. But just seeing how the coaching staff related with the players, how they related with each other, how they were already preparing their scouts for the year, how they were doing recruiting, how we had big football weekends and they were doing recruiting functions on the weekends and doing official visits and all that, just made me realize how much this can be a profession of mine and how much I love this game and how much I really want to make it my life's work. So no, it was probably within the first week. And truthfully, it was the relationships between the players and the coaches that sold me on it.
How do you balance the relationship between the responsibilities that you have as a student manager and your academic responsibilities? What were you majoring in? Was your major designed to get you to college coaching? Was your major designed to keep your mom and dad happy? How did you go about just balancing out, obviously, huge responsibilities? Even if you're just waiting around after a road trip to turn on the coach's car, you're doing that at the expense of sleep and getting to class and doing homework. So how did you balance that out?
No, that's a great question. I think a lot of times I forget about that part of my college experience. And I majored in sports management and I had a minor in religious studies. And I was actually blessed enough to be part of the Honors College there at Iowa. And I was able to graduate in 3 years. And so I was able to manage a lot. And the part that really taught me was just time management skills. And, you know, that was the biggest lesson I've learned. And the biggest takeaway I had was just how much you have to be able to allocate your time, how much you have to be able to prioritize. Okay, what's due tomorrow? What's due on Sunday at 12 p.m.? What's due on, you know, the next week? What is due not until the final? And just being able to balance that is something, is a skill that I wasn't great at freshman year. Sophomore year, I was pretty good at. And then my last year, I became really good at, where you're able to balance your time. You're able to go to class, lock in during class, and then lock in during practice, and then realize that, okay, I have this homework due tomorrow, I have this due the next day, whatever. And so, no, I'm not going to lie, it was an extremely tough balance. I sacrificed a lot of sleep. I probably sacrificed a lot of free time with friends. I sacrificed a lot of the other traditional, quote-unquote, fun things that college kids do. And but in the end, I was okay with that. You know, I had a goal in my mind in order to, you know, hopefully be a graduate assistant somewhere. And I had the goal in my mind to hopefully have that lead to a, you know, job on staff somewhere, and then hopefully lead to a college coaching job. And so I kind of saw the bigger picture, and I was willing to sacrifice, you know, those couple things in my life that other people normally do in order to have a tremendous experience as a manager, in order to get good grades, in order to, you know, obviously keep my academics first, and then also be able to develop relationships with the players and the coaches and do my best work for the Iowa program.
Great lesson there to be able to see that big picture and be able to understand that you may have to give some things up in the short term to be able to advance and get what you want to get out of your career. And obviously we've heard that from a lot of different coaches who have started in similar positions to you, where, hey, I'll do just about anything. You don't even have to pay me. I'll sleep on a mattress in somebody's spare room just so that I can get my foot in the door and be able to start my college coaching career. When you're there as a manager, what's one thing that you actually got to do as a manager that you love? Like, what aspect of being a manager, if there's one particular task or one particular duty that you had that you really love, what stood out there? And then second part of the question is, when you look at what some of the other coaches on staff, so a regular assistant coach or even the head coach or the director of ops, maybe there's something that you didn't get to do as a manager that you looked at kind of from afar and said, oh, I can't wait until I get to do that. So what did you love that you actually got to do? And then what were you looking forward to being able to do someday as you moved along in your career?
Yeah. And, wow. I really think, you know, one thing I got to do as a manager that I will honestly take with me for as long as I live, is I was really happy that we were able to do a lot of the one-on-one workouts with the players, as well as, you know, obviously with the coaching staff, but also, you know, one duty that I had as a manager that a lot of managers, I feel like, almost see as a negative or whatnot, is just rebound for the players. I love that, because you're not just rebounding for someone, you're developing relationships. You're, you know, going to the gym at midnight with a player just to help them get better. And then when they do have success on the court and they do make that shot that you rebounded for them for, you know, 100 times the night before, and then they make it that one time in the game, you really get a feeling of satisfaction. And so that's one job duty that I always accepted as a manager. I always made sure that I was around for the players whenever they needed someone to rebound for them. I was their guy. I would always be able to come to the gym no matter the hour, no matter whether I had homework due, whatever. I would always make sure I made that a priority, because I realized that you're not just, you know, I feel like a lot of people see it as, oh, I got to go rebound for this guy, or oh, I got to do this. And for me, I really saw it as, okay, I get to help develop a relationship, develop a player. Also, I'm able to continue to just work hard. And, you know, a lot of times nobody else sees that and nobody else really realizes that. But I'm a true believer that God sees hard work and God sees, you know, people working. And so for me, I was really just persistent with that and always made sure the players knew that they could contact me 24/7. And I really made that a priority for me. And so that was one part of the job that I was really excited I got to do, but also I realized that just the value of it. And then to your second part of your question, one thing, you know, I'm really excited for to be able to do one day is just to scout an opponent. And I really love the combination of film and analytics. And so for me as a coach, I'm really excited for it to be able to scout a team using, you know, using the film, breaking down their sets, breaking down what they do after timeouts on offense, defense, special teams, whatever, as well as combine that with analytics. Okay, you know, what are they, what percent of shots they shoot from three? You know, what are their best lineup combinations? What do they do when this guy's in the game versus that guy's in the game? Whatever. I'm really excited to get into the deep scouting reports of opponents. And, you know, I love helping out our coaches here or the coaches at Iowa with their scouts. And so I'm really, really looking forward to doing that myself, obviously, hopefully with the help of someone else, you know, manager or GA, and kind of reverse those roles. But I'm excited to be able to dive into that one day.
Have you put together your own scouting report just sort of as practice?
Yeah, no, I've really tried it. I've done that, you know, over the summers during the pandemic. I took a couple teams that I really liked, a lot of their sets they ran, or I liked some of their players, you know, that I noticed in the Big Ten. And so I'd break down four or five of their games and see what they do offensively and stuff. So I've done some mock scouts like that. And then also, you know, being a GA, you are kind of involved in every single scout, you know. So and so for me here at OU, I do I help out our, you know, three amazing assistant coaches. And then obviously Coach Moser with every scout we do. And so I do a lot of our, you know, film analytics, as well as really just whatever else the scout coach needs in regards to looking at player tendencies or what have you.
What's your favorite Iowa basketball moment during the 3 years you were there?
Whew, great question. I would have to say my freshman year, it was one of my first road trips, and we went to Rutgers. And Rutgers, they were decent that year. They weren't too crazy good, but I don't know if you know, but the Rack, formerly called the Rack, now I think it's like Jersey Mike's Arena or something. it's an extremely tough place to play. Nobody really realizes it outside the Big Ten, but once you are in there and it's like shaped like a trapezoid, the noise is crazy. They have the student section right on top of one side of it. You realize how hard of a place it is to win. Not only is it a long plane flight, it's, you know, different time zone, whatever. And my freshman year, like I said, it was like one of my first road trips. And one of my best friends, Joe Wieskamp, who's now with the Spurs, he you can Google the play. It's all over YouTube and Twitter and such. But it was, I think, 1 point something on the clock. Might have been 0.8. Connor McCaffrey throws a baseball pass. It gets tipped out. He hits a fading corner three that banks in. If you Google just Joe Wieskamp game winner against Rutgers, it'll pop up a billion times. But he hits like a leaning bank shot and had no reason to go in, but it went in. And I was, you know, 2 feet away from him. And it was just a cool moment because I rebounded so much for him my freshman year. He was one of my best friends. He was one of the best people on the team. I really got to know him on a deep personal level. And just to see him have success like that was really cool. And obviously, that was a great experience for one of my first, you know, road trips as a student manager.
There's nothing better than a buzzer beater, that's for sure. There is nothing better in a basketball game. No matter what happens, it doesn't matter what led up to it. When that ball goes in the basket and the buzzer goes off and your team has won, there is no more exciting play. I don't care if you're talking about third graders or NBA players. It's by far the best play in the game of basketball. All right, so you wrap up at the University of Iowa, and now it's time for you to get out into the quote-unquote real world. So what's the process look like for you? You mentioned earlier that as you're heading into your senior year of high school, you're writing to 25 schools looking for opportunities as a student manager. So now you get done at Iowa. What's your process for beginning to look for that first real opportunity to join a coaching staff? What does that look like?
Yeah, no, I mean, great question. I'm going to take you back even further because for me, going into my last year at Iowa, it was obviously during COVID, going into my last year was the, you know, obviously last year. And so when I was back home during the pandemic, I really wanted to prepare myself for the best future. And so I made it a priority to email darn near every Division I video coordinator, director of operations, some assistant coaches if they have their, you know, email on the website. And I really made it a priority to email them just to ask to do an informational interview. Just wanted to, you know, get their perspective on the industry, get their perspective on coaching, get some lessons for a young person like me wanting to be a graduate assistant, because I knew that would be the next step for me. And I emailed countless numbers of people. I would set it to where the night before I would have automatic emails go out in the morning, so it would be first thing in their inbox in the Eastern time zone. I was so into it. I hand wrote thousands of letters. And so that really, during the pandemic, obviously I had extra time to do that, which was amazing. And I was able to get on the phone with a bunch of people and I'd write down all my notes, my takeaways, and in a lot of areas get their phone numbers or, you know, getting how to be, you know, how to get in contact with them to become a graduate assistant after the next year. And so that was really a big key for me because I was able to make those early relationships. And so, you know, at the end of my last year at Iowa, I wasn't, you know, doing that and then saying, oh, I want to be a graduate assistant in 3 months. You know, I was able to say, okay, we talked back last year, we've developed a relationship throughout this year. And then now it's a much easier conversation starter to be saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for a graduate assistant opportunity. Would you have any open availabilities for the next year? And so that was a big key for me, was just starting early and doing my work early, similar to what I did during high school. And just I realized that worked during high school, getting into, you know, my manager position at Iowa. And then I realized that hopefully that would work again. And thankfully, you know, by the grace of God, it did. And so, you know, for me, you know, through that whole last year at Iowa, I was, you know, doing I wouldn't say even say networking. I was just trying to build relationships. I was trying to get to know people, get to know the industry, get to know how you even get a grad assistant job. You know, and I didn't realize this, but there are so few of these graduate assistant positions, which is why I'm so blessed and which is why I feel so lucky to be in the position I am, because I realize how hard it is. And so, no, doing my work early was, in hindsight, such a great decision, and really helped propel me to building relationships, and, you know, really ultimately propelled me to this position I have at OU now.
What was the relationship that allowed this opportunity to come your way?
Yeah, so I mentioned him earlier in the podcast, but Kirk Spira actually coached with Lon Kruger at the University of Florida during the early 1990s when Coach Kruger was there. And I talked to Coach Spira about just becoming a graduate assistant and what programs would be great. And his first mention was to go to Coach Kruger. And he, you know, said, you know, you'd love Coach Kruger, his style, his faith, his family, his values, and all that. And so I originally got in contact with Will Saxon, who was the former video coordinator here at Oklahoma with Coach Kruger. He's now at UNLV with Coach Kruger's son, Kevin Kruger, and had been talking to him all through last year. Was also talking to the director of operations here, Mike Shepard, who Coach Spira back at Iowa knew as well from Florida. And was just talking to them all throughout this year. And then, you know, when Coach Kruger retired, I was really scared. I was anxious. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. I built this whole relationship with the previous staff. I had a great connection through Coach Spira, who I loved, with Coach Kruger. And I was really at kind of a crux in my road. I was like, I thought this was a plan for me. I was really getting my heart set on OU because I knew they would potentially have a graduate assistant position open. And then, you know, thankfully enough, with Coach Moser and the coaching change happening, Will was able to pass on my name to Clayton Custer, who's now the current video coordinator and director of player development here at Oklahoma. And thankfully enough, I was able to get in contact with him and begin forming a relationship with him, and really, you know, trying to, you know, display my value to him. I would, you know, send him some example work I did at Iowa, send him a lot of what, you know, what value I can bring to Oklahoma. And then, you know, really the kicker, and I'm just so grateful for Coach McCaffrey for accepting me and for being able to develop a relationship to me where I was able to, you know, go into his office and say, hey, Coach, I'm looking at Oklahoma for a graduate assistant job. Would you be willing to reach out to Coach Moser on my behalf and just put in a little recommendation for me? And Coach McCaffrey goes, I love Porter. I'll do that, my man, and was super excited for me. And so him being able to reach out to Coach Moser, you know, just in a short text and say, you know, whatever he said, I don't even know what he said, but being able just to reach out to Coach Moser.
Sounds like something good, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it turned out to be something good. But for him to be able to reach out to Coach Moser on my behalf is a testament to just him being able to develop a relationship with just a student manager. And I'm just so grateful for Coach McCaffrey because he accepted me with open arms. He invited me to his house on Thanksgiving my freshman year when I had no place to go and we had to stay in town because we had a game. You know, invited me over for Christmas, for always involved me and took me really under his wing as a son. And so super grateful for Coach McCaffrey. And ultimately, I really, you know, credit the reason I'm here at OU, a lot of it towards him. So
did you have to go through an interview process?
Somewhat. It was less of an interview process than for Iowa, just because, you know, I did a lot of phone calls with Clayton Custer, and so right, he really got to know me. And then, you know, obviously Will Saxon from the previous staff was able to put in a good word for me as well. And then Coach McCaffrey being able to talk to Coach Moser was a big part of it as well.
What was different, or what's been different about the two programs? Is there something that stands out in terms of approach, just the way that they handle things with the staff, with the players? What's a big what's a difference that you noticed?
Yeah, no, great question. I think it's funny because a lot of it is very similar with regards to you know, the general operations, you know, the golf outings, the football weekends, the, you know, travel itineraries. A lot of that is very similar, which is again why I'm super blessed I was able to get the experience I did at Iowa. You know, one big difference is the staff here, and the assistant coaches specifically are much younger than our staff at Iowa. At Iowa, I think we were I don't know this for a fact, so don't quote me on it, but I think we were pretty much the only staff in the country where all three of our assistants had been Division I head coaches at a time. And so it was a much older staff there, a much kind of different vibe. And here we have three amazing younger assistants who are just tremendous with the players and who bring a lot of, you know, just very vibrant energy every day to the office. And so that's one major difference I've learned. And also just generally, I think, and this is probably true in a lot of programs, but Coach Moser and our staff being in the first year here, it's a lot different, you know, in workouts in the summer. It's a lot different in practices, even in the fall. It's just we have a slogan here that we're creating our culture. And, you know, at Iowa with Coach McCaffrey, he had been there for, you know, 9-10 years at that point. And so his culture was already in place. But, you know, here we really have to, you know, Coach Moser's big on culture and big on, you know, emphasizing the values and the standards that our guys and our staff has every day. And so that's one big difference is just, you know, going from being a part of a program that had so much consistency with the staff. And here we're all new from, you know, 9 of our players being new to all of our assistant coaches, Coach Moser, a lot of our support staff and stuff like that. And so that's kind of one major difference that I've noticed. And I honestly love it. It's amazing being in on the ground floor of a, you know, program. And it's really, really cool being able to see how Coach Moser builds his program up.
What are some of the things that you see culture-wise that Coach Moser's doing to instill those values that you've talked about on a day-to-day basis? What are some things you see?
Yeah, I think one thing that Coach Moser really has a great ability in is just to balance accountability and love. And he's got a big he makes a big emphasis that he likes to hold our players accountable because he loves them, because he cares for them, because he wants the best for them. And, you know, he's a truth teller. He'll tell it like it is, whether that's good or bad. And I think our guys really appreciate that because, you know, they don't want a coach that'll just say everything's great when everything's not a good, you know, and they don't want a coach that says everything's terrible when everything's great. And so Coach Moser is big on the truth and, you know, big on establishing that with our players. And, you know, that's a really, really strong character trait of him. And, you know, I think we also have a culture wall downstairs in our film room, and it's got a bunch of little, you know, Coach Moser actually took it from Coach Majerus when he worked with him at St. Louis. But it's got a bunch of, you know, kind of 2 or 3 or 4 word phrases that our guys can automatically know what it means on the basketball court. So, you know, close to the body, body up, body in, you know, win the first 3 steps. All these short little slogans are just really catchy, to be honest. And our guys see them every day and they are able to get them in the game. And that's something we really glorify in our film sessions and in practices and in walkthroughs or, you know, whatever we're doing. We really glorify those, you know, those culture terms. We call them getting into the game.
I think those terms and having that shared language is something that we've heard from a lot of coaches is so important in terms of their communication, both just in terms of allowing players to understand what's expected of them, but also when you think about being able to say something quickly. So maybe the first time you have to give a detailed explanation of what that phrase means. And then after that, you can just use the phrase. And so it cuts down on those long-winded speeches, which all of us coaches like to do, but yet aren't really very valuable for players because as we all know, they tune us out after 5 or 10 seconds. So if you can just learn to speak in those sound bites, that's there's tremendous value in being able to condense a complex idea or a complex concept down into those simple ideas, whether that's something on the floor or whether that's something culture-wise. We've heard a lot of coaches talk about doing just that and being able to incorporate that into your program. I can see where that adds to the growth. When you think about your own role, what you did as a student manager at Iowa versus what you're doing now at Oklahoma, just give people an idea of what are some of the added responsibilities that you've taken on as you've taken this first step in your career?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, obviously, you know, the main kind of noticeable difference I would say is just the time spent being a graduate assistant. You know, you're in the office every day and then you have class late at night. And obviously as an undergrad student manager, you're taking more classes and you're more involved academically and on campus. And I was involved in a bunch of other campus groups and campus ministry. I was involved in, you know, the Honors College I mentioned. And so being a GA, you know, you you know, you're in the office from, you know, 7 to 9, 10 p.m. or whatever, depending on your classes. And so obviously the time spent in the office is, you know, kind of the first noticeable difference. But, you know, you're also I'm blessed enough as a, you know, GA. Coach Moser has us in every, you know, coaching meeting, every, you know, game planning meeting, every scouting meeting. And so we're really leaned on there. And, you know, me specifically, our other two GAs were former players. And so they do a lot of the player development and a lot of the workouts with the assistant coaches and, you know, kind of that realm. And then, you know, I'm leaned on heavily for all of our analytics as well as all of our film needs, whether that's recruiting, whether that's getting opponent game film or recording games or whatever. I'm leaning on heavily for that. And so a lot of the coaches, you know, really are, you know, I'm blessed that they allow me to be in on those scouting and game planning meetings and able to have a voice and, you know what, you know, X player shoots off the dribble versus catch and shoot versus guarded catch and shoot versus unguarded catch and shoot, what their finishing percentage at the rim is, what percent they get offensive rebounds, and just really being able to help out there with the analytics is one role that I've really dove deep into and one role that I really love and can really, really feel like I add value to the coaching staff. And that's the ultimate goal, is just how can I add value every single day? And that's one really great way during the season that I'm able to add value is just being able to provide the coaches with a lot of great information with regards to that. And like I said, I'm blessed enough that they allow me to do that, and they allow me in every meeting, and they allow me to help out in that way.
What does a typical day look like for you? And I know there probably isn't any such thing as a typical day, but let's just say it's the day before a home game. Kind of run us through the itinerary of what your schedule might look like on a day before a game.
Yeah, no. One of our players, Mo Gibson, he works out every single morning at 6:30 a.m. And so I'm here at 6:15 a.m. to rebound for him and help him work out on his own time. And he, you know, voluntarily comes in early in the morning to get his work done early so he can, you know, do school and rest up before practice. And so I'm in here early with him with a cup of coffee, most likely. And once he finishes up, obviously I'll come back to the office and start to work on really the opponent scout. And by that time, I'll have all the analytics that we run finished. So I'll be working on whether that's going back through and clipping practice up from the yesterday and going through the practice stats of yesterday, or just doing, you know, more independent analytics projects, whether that's shot charts or lineup stats or, you know, finishing up any other, you know, opponent scouting stuff. And then normally we'll meet as a staff later in the morning and go over, you know, game planning. And so helping out with that and, you know, being there if they need any film needs, but also need any, you know, player tendencies or player analytic needs. And then, you know, small break for lunch, and then we'll normally plan practice, and then we practice every day at 2, and we'll go through practice. We'll normally watch film, obviously, before practice, and so I'll help prepare the film edits and, you know, any specialty edits that we'll need, whether that's showing a team's offensive rebound, showing a team's fast break point, showing a team's, you know, off-ball cutting, and so breaking down those individual film edits that we show our guys, and then obviously practice. And my main role during practice is I film and code every single practice. And so I'll be filming. And then once the play ends, I'll clip that up for the coaches to watch and then repeat. And then once practice is done, I'll make sure I am able to put practice on every single coach's computer so they can watch. I upload practice to Huddle for the players to watch if they want to go back on their own time and watch practice, which a lot of them do. And then after that, we'll maybe meet a little bit more as a staff just to go over what we want to do, you know, during the game tomorrow, or, you know, how we want to approach a shoot around or whatnot. And then normally I'll go to class after that, or realize that I'm still a student and do my homework or whatnot. And then that's a typical day in the life. And then that night I'll probably work on the next opponent and just continue to stay ready, stay ahead, obviously, as well.
So you don't have very much to do is what you're saying.
Nope, nothing to do. Not much at all. And we also, we have to do, we make these, we go to FedEx and print out these big scouting sheets with all the stats, with all the, you know, obviously what's on the scouting report, as well as pictures and all that information, height, weight, whatever for our guys. And so I'll make that on there, and then I have to go to FedEx in the morning and put in the order, and then go back, you know, during lunch and actually pick up the printing, you know, the 24 by 36 printer sheets. And so that'll be a big part of it as well, just to make sure we have all that ready to be able to show the guys in the before practice.
All right. From an analytics standpoint, without giving away any proprietary secrets, what are one or two things that either you personally or your staff, what are some things that you spend a lot of time looking at from an analytics standpoint that you feel impacts winning?
Great question. I think, you know, one thing that we really focus on as a staff is just, and this is probably especially defensively, but it, you know, range through offensively as well, is just, you know, you're always having to give up something. You can't take away everything. And so a lot of our staff meetings revolve around, okay, what are we willing to give up? Are we willing to give up open threes to non-shooters? Are we willing to give up maybe extra free throws for the opponents? Are we willing to give up defensive rebounds? Are we willing to give up turnovers? Are we willing to give up offensive rebounds so we have a better transition defense? And so analytically speaking, a lot of it revolves around that and, you know, knowing, okay, if the team's a really good fast break team, for example, we played Arkansas this last weekend and they're elite in transition. They average almost 17 points per game in transition. They're elite defensive rebounding and they're elite in transition. What does that mean for us? We probably shouldn't send more than two guys to the glass. So we should probably get back in transition and we probably should not go for offensive rebounds. And so just kind of those little subtle, you know, subtle tidbits that a lot of people, you know, you try to think, oh, we can be good at everything. And a lot of teams are really good at everything, to be honest. But, you know, there's always a trade-off. And so that's one thing that we talk a lot about and we use a lot of analytics to showcase that. You know, analytically, we also use a lot of the lineup stats, you know, what player combinations are better, what front court combination works, what front court combination doesn't work, what, you know, which one will work offensively, which one's a little, you know, worse offensively, but better defensively. And so we'll look at all that. And then we'll also really look at, shot quality and not just offensively, but more, you know, defensively. Are we willing to give up, you know, off the dribble jumpers to one guy because he's a really, you know, poor off the dribble jump shooter, but catch and shoot, he's deadly. So what do we have to do? We got to make him put it on the deck. We got to make him dribble into a shot. We got to make him, you know, settle for a mid-range jumper. So just kind of those subtle things we really use on an everyday basis. And it also, you know, will play a factor in how we guard ball screens. Will play a factor in how we guard certain actions that the opponent might run. It also might impact, you know, some of the things we run offensively. And so I know it's a really long-winded answer, but just kind of, you know, all those from team, player, lineup, you know, obviously overall stats as well, we'll look at, you know, everything.
It's amazing the amount of data that is available to be crunched in today's basketball world. It really is incredible. Even if you go back, and you're obviously much, much younger than me, but we go back to even 15 or 20 years ago when none of this stuff was available, and just how different it was preparing and understanding what was going on the floor. I'm curious with a staff today, and I don't know if this is something that you've seen or not seen, but has there ever been a case that you've witnessed where some analytics or some statistics are presented to the coaching staff, or there's something that they're looking at and it's maybe not agreeing with their quote eye test or their gut, what their gut is telling them versus what the analytics are saying to them. And there's been sort of a disagreement between, hey, this is what the analytics are saying, but I don't know that I fully trust that because this is what I'm seeing with my eyes. Have you been privy to any conversations along those lines?
Yes, I would say to some extent, for sure. I think a lot of times that probably will happen later in the year. Just due to the fact that, you know, once we get into deeper into conference play and teams have played, you know, 20, 25, 30 games, a lot of times it's, you know, just frankly hard to, for the scout coach to go back and watch all 30 games or all 25 games. Right. And so, but obviously the analytics go back to the start of the year. And so that's where you kind of have to trust it, and you have to realize, okay, maybe in the 10 games I've watched, he hasn't made one, you know, catch and shoot shot, but before that he was making 10 out of 10 catch and shoot shots. And so his percentage might be decent, but he hasn't made it a lot recently. But you have to trust the retroactive, I guess, or the, you know, previous games that you might have not watched with your own eye. And so I think that's a big one. But no, there's been a lot of instances like that. And, you know, a lot of times the eye test is always, you know, what you directly see. But a lot of times you have to trust the analytics, because a lot of times, you know, the analytics have no bias. The analytics, you know, obviously go through all the games. The analytics obviously have every situation down pat. And so, you know, and quite frankly, the analytics are a lot smarter than the human brain. And so you might remember, you know, 59 out of the 60 plays. Well, the numbers remember all 60 plays. And so, you know, a lot of times you have to trust it. And, you know, a lot of times too, that's on me, because I have to be able to develop a rapport with the coaching staff to where they trust me enough to, you know, be able to realize that I'm not lying to them when I say this, and I'm not lying to them when I say the analytics say this. And so, you know, a lot of times that's part of it. And then quite frankly, a big thing I've noticed is just, and I think one skill that I'm trying to develop every day is just, how can I present all the analytics, all the numbers, all the stats in the most easy to understand way for the coaching staff, you know? And I think that's one thing that you can show them some fancy document with all these numbers on it, and the graphics might be cool and it might be all color coded and whatever. But if the coaches can't interpret it and they don't know what it means, then it's kind of useless. And so that's one thing I've really noticed, is you can build some fancy template and you can have all this, but if the coaches don't know what everything means in practicality on the basketball court, then it's all useless. And so it might look cool to you or to Twitter or whatever, but that's one thing I really pride myself on, is being able to explain it in a logical and a coherent way that the coaches can not only understand, but also implement into a game plan to help us win games.
How much analytics do you share with the players directly? So are there things that individually that you're seeing trends, maybe with a player statistics, that you can share with them to point out either something they're doing well or something they need to improve on? Is that something that you share with them? Is that something that you share with the coaching staff, and the coaching staff passes that along to them? Or just what does that process look like?
Yeah, no, it's both. You know, the coaches are more than comfortable with me sharing it with them. And I have in many cases, but also I'll tell, you know, the coaches some, you know, scout, you know, some stats from our team, and then they'll share it with them. So I would say it's a balance of both. You know, with regards to the amount, I think, it's got to, you have to really know the player on a personal basis to be able to do it, where, you know, if you just go in and saying, well, the analytics say you're a bad mid-range shooter, so you should stop shooting mid-range, then that doesn't come across the right way. And that gets in the player's head in a bad way to where they're now overthinking. And that's the last thing you want. And so, you know, I think it just depends on the rapport you have with the player. And, you know, a lot of it as well is just what, you know, what is something that, you know, if you see in practice for the last, you know, 6 months since June that this player is a really, really good, you know, at the rim finisher, and maybe through, you know, we played 10 games, maybe through 10 games, his percentage is just decent. You know, you should probably trust the 6 months of prior data that you've seen during every single practice and every single workout, you know? And so I think there's the right balance to it. And then, you know, like I've said a bunch of times, it comes down to that personal relationship and whether they trust you, whether you trust them, not overthinking. You're just trying to give them mere information, and kind of finding that balance is really key.
Yeah, the analytics world it's fascinating to me, because there's just so much data that's available, both from a team standpoint and an individual standpoint. And then you start factoring in what you're looking at with opponents and all these types of things. And as you said, I'm sure that the key for any coaching staff is to be able to pull out of the numbers things that they can understand, things that are meaningful, things that impact winning. Because you can throw a bunch of numbers at whoever you want, and even though they may be the right numbers, if somebody's not willing to hear that, or somebody's not willing to understand it, or somebody doesn't present it in the right way, then just having the numbers doesn't do you any good. It's what you ultimately end up doing with the doing with the numbers that I hear you saying, which makes complete sense to me. when you think about the two head coaches that you've had the privilege to work for so far in Coach McCaffrey and Coach Moser, when you think about what makes a good head coach, what makes a successful head coach, can you point to one or two characteristics that those two guys have shown in the time that you've been with them that you think have been the keys to their success? Are there things you can point to that you're like, boy, they're really good at this, and this is what helps them to lead them to success?
Well, yeah. I can probably think of a thousand things. I mean,
I'm sure you can.
I think, obviously they're both super intelligent when it comes to on-the-court basketball, schematics, game planning, building a program, recruiting, player development, being able to identify good players versus great players and being able to recruit and bring the right ones in the program. That all goes without saying. They're both two of the most successful head coaches in the entire country. So that goes without saying. But I think the one thing that makes them beyond even great coaches, but just great leaders in general, is just their ability to connect with people, not just their best player, not just their assistant coaches, not just their director of ops, but everyone. One thing that made Coach McCaffrey so special is he treated us managers the same way he treated Luka Garza, the same way he treated all of his assistant coaches. And obviously there's a different relationship between player coach, player manager, player manager, whatever. But he didn't compromise treating anyone. He didn't make anyone feel inferior. He didn't make anyone feel superior. He treated everyone with equality and everyone with fairness and decency. And that really is something that really pulled at my heartstrings and something that I really appreciated from being a manager there. I came in expecting to be, the lowest of the totem pole, not even involved with the program, but just kind of, part-time manager. And then once I got into it, I realized I'm full-time. Coach McCaffrey really respects me. He really values me. He really nurtured our relationship. And so that's one thing that made him special. And Coach Moser is the exact same way. He treats us GAs, everyone with equality, everyone with fairness and with kindness. And so I think just being, even beyond all the basketball X's and O's stuff, just being able to treat everyone equal and treat everyone fair, and obviously a different relationships with different players and different people on staff, but just the ability to connect with everyone on a personal basis, it really makes you work harder. Quite frankly, if Coach McCaffrey treated me, if he treated me like, oh, whatever, just a random manager, I probably wouldn't have worked as hard as I did for him, but he was able to treat me with such respect and such love. And the same with Coach Moser, that it makes you want to work harder for them. It makes you want to do your very best for them. It makes you want to stay up late for them, because you just know that they really appreciate you on a one-on-one, on a personal level.
I think that speaks to what you talked about earlier, just in your own life and your own journey of building those relationships with people in all walks of life, with all the different coaches that you reached out to when you knew that you were going to be looking for a job. And obviously, as a head coach, when you build relationships with your staff, with your players, with your managers, and then you not only have that, but you also have the greater university community at large to be able to sell your program. And those relationships are such a huge part of what ends up being ultimately your own success. Where you are right now in your career, I want you to give us a piece of advice that you might have for someone. Let's say you're talking to a senior in high school who's interested in following the same path that you have. I know we've basically talked about in detail some of the things that maybe you're going to share right now, but just if you had one or two pieces of advice for somebody who is in high school right now, wants to get into college coaching, what would you recommend to them? What are some things that you might suggest that they do to help get them on the right path?
Yeah. I think, this is almost me talking to my younger self and kind of thinking back what I would want to hear from someone, in my position. I think one thing I would really harp on to them is just really being willing to go anywhere for college. I think a lot of times if you, you really want to get into coaching, you really want to be a manager, but you go to one school that maybe, you know, you have your heart set on one college that maybe they only have, maybe they're only hiring one manager a year, you know, maybe. So I would just really encourage them to, and not make their whole college decision about, oh, where can I be a manager? But I would really encourage them to make that a factor in their decision. If they really want to make this their life's work, then really pick a college where you've, you know, contacted the director of ops and maybe you already have a relationship and you might have a good chance to be a manager. Maybe contact someone early and say, hey, I really want to, you know, do this in college. You know, is this a spot that I could, you know, be a manager? Is this a spot I could try out to? What do you think my chances would be? So that's one piece of advice I would give. And, you know, again, my college decision, I didn't have any guarantee that I'd be a manager at Iowa. All I had was a prior existing relationship with a couple people on staff and the head manager. And I, you know, said my prayers and I committed to Iowa. But, you know, I think a lot of times you have to go out on the limb and you have to, you know, take a chance. And so that would be one piece of advice I would give them, is just not to pigeonhole them in, you know, a college or university that might not have a basketball program with a lot of managers. Maybe they have one manager or whatever. So I have one piece of advice. And then, you know, just secondly, I would really tell them just to really have a mindset. And this, I'm trying to remind myself of this every single day I live. But just, you know, no task is ever too big. No task is ever too small. And just really being willing to do anything. And I know that sounds really cliche and a lot of managers say that. But to be actually do it is a whole different animal. And so, you know, that's an approach I had every single day. And it's a constant reminder to myself, even as a GA, even when, you know, I'm a coach one day, you know, just to remind yourself that no task is too small, no task is too big, and just being willing to take out the trash, being willing to wipe up the floor, being willing to rebound at midnight, being willing to stay up till 2 a.m. cutting film, whatever that is, being willing to really make those sacrifices for what you want. And ultimately, Coach Moser's got a great expression where, you know, he always says you achieve what you emphasize. And if you emphasize your coaching career, if you emphasize your passion in basketball, then you'll achieve it. If you emphasize, you know, partying, going out on weekends, hanging with friends, then you might not achieve what you ultimately hope for, you know, in college coaching. And that's fine, but you really achieve what you emphasize. And during my years in college, I really emphasized my manager experience. I really emphasized building relationships. I really emphasized, you know, being, you know, really getting good at all the video stuff. I really emphasized, you know, being there for the players. And, you know, I thank God that I achieved it. But a lot of it comes through hard work, and a lot of it comes through, you know, what you place an emphasis on. And so that'd be my biggest advice, is just, if you really want to make this your life's work, and you want to get in the industry and hopefully get a grad assistant spot one day, then you know, need to emphasize it during your undergrad career, which a lot of people don't do, and that's fine. And that's fine. But they might not get to where they ultimately want to because they didn't, you know, emphasize it.
Well said. All right. I want to wrap it up with one final question. And I want you to look ahead 5 years from now, 10 years from now, somewhere down the road. Where do you see yourself ending up? I'm not asking you to pick out your specific school and what you're going to do, but just sort of what do you envision as your career path? And then what are some steps that you maybe feel like you need to take in order to get there?
Yeah, no, great question. I think, you know, my dream ultimately is to be a head coach one day. You know, I think for me in the short term, you know, I really want to focus on putting myself in the best position to be a video coordinator or a director of scouting, analytics, whatever, whatever that, you know, title might be. Just really bone up on my skill sets in those areas. And put myself in a position to where, you know, next year, once I get my master's and I, you know, graduate from grad school, I'm able to, whether that's here at OU, at Iowa, wherever, that I'm in a good enough position, you know, obviously relationship wise with people around the country, but also technically wise where I'm, you know, capable of doing the job. I really want to put myself in that best position to do that. You know, and then hopefully go from there to being an assistant coach somewhere. And, you know, working with a head coach that I really believe in, working with a head coach that I have a great relationship with, and, you know, being with a head coach that I really trust to be able to build something to where hopefully you just continue to build whatever program you're at. And, you know, one other piece of advice that I have to give myself every day, but I would also give to any young person who wants to get into college coaching and just working within college basketball, is just to focus on the job they're at now. You know, whether that's me back at Iowa or me at OU today, just if you focus on the present and you focus on the job you have, then the future will take care of itself. You know, and the, you know, wherever you're going to be at in 2 years, 3 years, whatever, that'll all take care of itself. If you don't focus on the present and you're always looking towards the future, then you're going to look down and realize that, you know, you didn't have the record you wanted to be able to make that next step. You didn't do, you know, you create the relationships where you're at now to be able to make that next step. And so that's one thing I keep reminding myself is just to be in the present, you know, focus on this year at Oklahoma and make this the best year at Oklahoma, you know, and then, you know, the future will take care of itself. And, you know, our staff here at Oklahoma will help me in the future because I put such good work in the present. And so that's something that I really continue to just harp on and continue to remind myself every day is to, you know, be where my feet are and really bloom where I'm planted.
As you said, that is much easier said than done, for sure. There is no question about that. I will say that you have had the opportunity to work for two extremely successful head coaches, and I'm sure that the lessons that you've been absorbing over this beginning part of your career are going to eventually pay off and lead you to the things that you want to get to. We cannot thank you, Dylan, enough for taking the time out of your schedule, adding to your typical day of basketball. We're keeping you up late and making you a part of it, but we're thankful that you took the time to join us. I think there was a lot of great insight that you shared, especially for young coaches who are part of our audience. I think there's a lot of valuable lessons that they can take away from what you shared. So again, thank you. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.